The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and we're coming to you live from Edstone, England. Our studio over here has been a bit dormant for the last few weeks. I guess not completely dormant. We still have a few other shows and foreign language, Key of David, audio, and that kind of thing that we record over here while Mr. Flurry has been over in Edmond, and the crew over there have been handling everything. But now we're back in action for one day only here in Edstone. Unfortunately, I don't have any updates on the pack for you. I haven't seen any of the latest numbers from the public appearance campaign, the second night in New York last night. So I guess, like me, you'll have to eagerly await tomorrow's show to maybe get an update and some of the figures from that. As usual, there's no shortage of news to talk about. We had some, had it in the top of the hour news. There's dramatic footage yesterday from Hong Kong where protesters stormed the parliament, raised the Hong Kong colonial era flag with the Union Jack on it. It'll be interesting to see how China responds to that pretty direct attack on their power over there. So I'll keep watching that story. Also, they've now announced that Iran has breached its low-enriched uranium limit. So that confrontation keeps building as Iran keeps pushing and pushing on its nuclear program. According to the Wall Street Journal, another Iranian official told reporters that Iran is thinking about leaving the non-proliferation treaty. Doing that would basically be Iran declaring that their nuclear program isn't peaceful, something that they've not really admitted before, though I think everybody knows it, but rather that they're doing it for weaponization or to try and create a bomb. We'll still have something up on our website probably later today on that important story. But the main story I want to talk about, and you got a preview of this yesterday on Mr. Flurry's show, is the EU signing a free trade deal with Mercosur, this Latin American trade bloc made up of Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay. There are a few other associate members, and Venezuela's been suspended, so it's with these four. Now, you may be thinking, why would we want to focus on that? You know, what's so important about a free trade deal of all things? And a free trade deal with some trade bloc that probably half the people in the US and the UK have never even heard of. Well, listen to what Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry said about this in a Key of David back in January when the EU announced that it was going to be pushing hard to get this deal done. This is clip four.
But what you need to realize and what we all need to realize is this is going to affect our lives and your life in a way that perhaps nothing has ever affected it before. It's that important. And it has everything to do with our trade policy and a trade war that is going to do great damage to America. And we need to understand what Bible prophecy says about it.
So this is something that's going to do great damage to America. Something that's going to affect your life, Mr. Flurry said in that. That's quite a lot of hype for a trade deal. So why did he say that on that Key of David? Why is this an important story? How is it going to affect your life? What does Bible prophecy say about this trade deal with Mercosur? Well, I want to answer those questions in today's show, and we'll hear a fair bit more from that Key of David, because that's just great for helping us to understand its significance. This subject was also on the cover of our March Trumpet print edition. Again, important enough to go right on the cover, with Mr. Flurry having a cover article titled America is Being Besieged Economically, going into talking about this deal. And we'll quote from that article as well. But first, here's the European president, Jean-Claude Juncker. This is how he announced the deal back on Friday.
Good morning, dear colleagues. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We stand before you as the co-owners of a trade agreement between the European Union and Mercosur. I like to use words with care, but this is a truly historic moment. This agreement has been 2 decades in the making.
So a truly historic moment. If you're watching on the YouTube stream, you could see all the other EU leaders crowding on the, and other Mercosur leaders as well, crowding on the stage behind him, including Angela Merkel up there. But he called it a truly historic moment. The EU leaders are certainly very excited about this deal. The Argentinian president, President Macri, he said, "This is the most important agreement we've signed in our history." So he seems pretty keen on it as well. So let's get the big picture here. This deal is not just about trade. This is about creating a close alliance between the EU and Latin America. It's about these two blocks really coming together in a very practical way. They both have a whole lot in common already. But this trade deal is, well, with this trade deal, they're starting to formalize that relationship, to formalize that alliance. And this is coming in Latin America, in America's backyard. And these aren't distant events that are only going to affect America tangentially. These impinge and reflect directly on American security. Now, Europe setting up a close alliance in the Western Hemisphere in Latin America, that is exactly what U.S. foreign policy has worked really hard to stop for 200 years. And the fact that so few are talking about this, I think, is a major condemnation of the news industry and news commentary. Even if just setting aside Bible prophecy, even just with a better understanding of the news and geography and history, I think more people would be talking about this and what's going on here. Because there's a lot more to this than economics. I mean, here's the European Union's Trade Commissioner announcing that deal. And notice what she talks about as she gives that announcement.
The agreement reached today will create a free trade area covering 760 million peoples, bringing two continents closer together in spirit of openness and cooperation. And we do that with friends and allies with whom we have long historical ties and with whom we work very well in many other areas as well.
So it's about bringing together an alliance. It's about creating an alliance. It's not just about some kind of trade agreement. Now, before we go too much further, we should probably talk about some of the details of what they have agreed, because that is important. It is mostly a trade agreement. The full text hasn't been published yet, though there is more than just trade in there. So as we heard in that clip, the agreement covers 780 million people and between the EU, mostly European countries, and Mercosur, which, like we said, is Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay. And it will get rid of 4 billion euros worth of duties. That's probably around 4 or 5 billion US dollars in terms of these different taxes and tariffs. And that will, those taxes and tariffs will be phased out over about 10 to 15 years. It will be 90% of around 92-93% of the tariffs between these two blocks are going to be eliminated. So that means Europe will be able to sell cars, industrial machinery to these countries without tariffs. But meanwhile, Mercosur will still have pretty high tariffs in place for other countries. Mercosur generally is quite a high tariff zone, typically very protectionist. And this is significant. So if we look at, say, cars, Brazil puts a 35% tax on all cars made outside of Mercosur that are imported in. So it's really hard for foreign countries to sell cars there. They pretty much just have to set up a local factory. That's about the only way they can do it. But once this free trade deal is fully kicked in, it means Europe will be able to sell cars to Brazil with very little or no tariff, while cars being made in China or the US or Japan will still have to pay this 35% tariff. They're going to cost more than a third more for the same car. So you can really see how this is going to just accelerate the relationship between Latin America and Europe. All of these kind of manufactured goods that come from Europe are going to be dramatically cheaper than manufactured goods that come from anywhere else in the world. At the same time, Mercosur is going to be able to sell raw materials to Europe cheaply. Agricultural goods, farming goods, but also other kinds of raw material that comes from this area. And so you're going to see Mercosur, Latin America, get even more closely integrated into the European and especially the German supply chain, almost like playing a similar role to the role Southern Europe plays at the moment, feeding in cheap raw materials and then buying up the industrial output of those raw materials. And now you start to see who really benefits the most from this Mercosur deal. It's Germany. It helps them get the cheap raw materials for their industry and then opens up this huge new market for them to sell finished goods to at a cheaper price than any of their competitors from any of the developed nations anywhere in the world. German Foreign Policy, they had an article talking about this, and they wrote, the largest supplier of Mercosur in the EU is the Federal Republic of Germany. Correspondingly, German companies can be considered the main beneficiaries of the free trade agreement, especially since German industry has held a strong position for decades, not least in Brazil. For example, in the industrial metropolis of Sao Paulo. In particular, the automotive industry hopes for export growth. In fact, the agreement is likely to put Mercosur in a classic colonial position as a market for EU industrial products and suppliers of raw materials. But then this deal goes beyond just agreeing not to put tariffs on each other. Whenever the EU signs these free trade types of agreements, there's a whole lot of rules that go with them. And like I said, the full details haven't been published yet. I'm sure there will be some really interesting points buried in the small print. But with what they have published, we can already see there's going to be a lot of regulation unity between these two blocks in that agreement as well. So, for example, the Paris Climate Change Accord is kind of foundational to this whole agreement. So they've got these Latin American countries as part of this agreement have said they've got to stick to the Climate Change Accord. Mercosur, they've signed up to the EU's rules on geographic indications. So this means, for example, you can only call feta cheese if it comes from Greece. Otherwise, you can have something that's made in exactly the same way as feta cheese, but if it doesn't come from Greece, you can't call it feta cheese. That's the kind of the geographic indicators rule. And Europe has these rules for hundreds and hundreds of different products like champagne and Prosecco and cheeses and all these kinds of different products. So Latin America is going to go along with that. Japan's signed up to the same kind of thing, and Canada. And those are just some small examples of some of the rules and regulations that they'll be signing up to from Europe. So this is really going to integrate their economies. It's an important practical step in building an alliance, well, perhaps more than a step, a great leap towards building an alliance. And that is what this is about. Going back to that article from German Foreign Policy, they wrote, Mercosur also stands out because of its market size, but also because of its political role. Brazil, which has the largest population in Latin America, accounts for well over three-quarters of Mercosur's overall economic performance and aspires not only economically, but also politically to a leadership position in South America. And geographically, Brazil and then also Argentina really do dominate South America. Both of them are part of Mercosur. You control them, you basically control all of South America. So by forging close relationships with a trade bloc that has both of these two, the EU is establishing a really dominant role in this region. So that's what this trade deal is all about. Why does it matter? You know, why is this so important? Why was it the subject of our cover article of the March Trumpet print edition? Well, we'll take a quick break now. When we get back, we'll look at this trade deal and we'll look at that critical question of why this is so important for you.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Holy Roman Empire has made pivotal and defining contributions to Western civilization, but its many reincarnations have also come with painful and catastrophic consequences. European leaders aim to unite the fractured continent of Europe by reviving the legacy of this extraordinary church-state combined. One of the great lessons of this empire is that it always comes back. There is always another resurrection. To understand much more on this vital subject, call now and request our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. The Holy Roman Empire is not just a relic of history. it is about to play a central role in world events. Coming to understand about the nature and character of this powerful institution tells you as much about the future as it does about the past. As part of this free offer, also request Herbert Armstrong's classic work, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? Both booklets are available at no cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free book, you may also request a free subscription to our monthly news magazine, The Philadelphia Trumpet. The Trumpet examines world events under the clear light of Bible prophecy. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it, because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
The European Union is about to make its largest trade deal ever, and it's probably going to be made in 2019, and that certainly is the forecast. That trade is going to be made with the Mercosur trade bloc, which includes Brazil and Argentina, Uruguay and Paraguay. And we have been prophesying for over 60 years that this is going to happen. And what it all means, it's going to mean some very dark days for America if we don't heed Bible prophecy and realize what God has to say about it. Latin America has helping to create the Holy Roman Empire. And they have a lot of rich resources that the European Union or the Holy Roman Empire needs. And of course, they're providing some great needs that the Latin American people also have.
That was the introduction from Mr. Flurry's Key of David on this subject in January, again, when Europe said they're going to push hard to get this deal done by the end of the year, this deal that they have now successfully done with Latin America. And that is what this story really is all about, the rise of this Holy Roman Empire and its role in Latin America. Now, we'll look at some scriptures about that. Before we read those, I just want to read one quote from the May 1962 Plain Truth that really is astonishing in the light of this trade deal. That's when Mr. Flurry in that introduction said that we've been prophesying for over 60 years, this is an example of that. And this magazine, The Plain Truth, that was the magazine that was run by Herbert W. Armstrong, the predecessor of the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine. And this was all the way back in May 1962, and it wrote, "The United States is going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocs, Europe and Latin America, mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce." That happened. That's exactly what happened on Friday. These two groups meshed together, and it was an agreement between trade blocs, just like the Plain Truth said. These two trade blocs are meshing together. That's what Friday's agreement was all about. Now, the EU and Mercosur, they've been working on this agreement for 20 years. And there are a lot of people saying, well, it's not going to happen. They've been working on this for two decades. They haven't managed to sort it out. They're never going to get this done. But then that was, 57, nearly 60 years ago? The Plain Truth was there saying, this is going to happen. You're going to see a trade block in Europe, and you're going to see a trade block in Latin America, and then they're going to mesh together. They're going to work together. How could Mr. Armstrong possibly know about that so long ago? Such a specific forecast there. Well, it's because of the Bible, and it's because of Bible prophecy. And we'll talk about some of those scriptures that he based that forecast on now. And you can prove every bit of what I'm talking about to yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. Now, to do that, for some of those things, you'll have to take a bit more time outside of this program to study some material. But then, you know, just think about that quote, how accurate it proved. Isn't it worth taking the time to look into a source that can forecast the future like that? Understanding the Bible in this kind of detail, understanding why and how it can forecast the future, that's going to have major benefits to you in your personal life. All of this prophecy is in the Bible to help you see your creator, the Bible's author, to see that God rules in the kingdom of men, as it says in the book of Daniel. It's not just to give us a sneak peek of the future. But let's look at what the Bible says here. So in Revelation chapter 17, is crucial to understanding this Holy Roman Empire. And actually, the ad that we heard, the clip that we heard during the break is perfect for setting this subject up. But Revelation chapter 17, and well, we'll read verse 3. It says, "So he carried me away into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. So we see a beast here, ridden by this woman. Well, who is this beast? Well, we can look in verse 12 and 13, and it gives us more details about it. Well, verse 11 says, well, this beast that and the beast that was and that is not, he then he is the eighth. And then in verse 12, it talks about the 10 horns on this beast. And it says, these are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet. So, well, the beast is some kind of political organization then. At some point, it's going to have 10 kings. So it's obviously some kind of political unit here, an empire or a kingdom of some sort. But then verse 3 tells us that it's ridden by a woman. And a woman in biblical symbolism is a church. You can see that even just in Revelation 12. So you've got a beast ridden by a woman, a political unit, some kind of empire, and it's got a close relationship with a church. And then this chapter tells us a bit more about this organization, or about this beast power. And we can, verse 10 tells us, and verse 10, there's so much truth just packed into this tiny, relatively small verse. But it says here, there are 7 kings, 5 are fallen, and 1 is, and the other is not yet come. And when he continues, he must continue for a short space. So one of the most basic observations we can make about this chapter, or about this verse, is that, okay, there are 7 kings, 5 are fallen. So if there are 5 kings in the past, 1 in the present, when this verse is at the time this verse is talking about, and 1 is to come. And this verse is describing a situation where there's an individual on the scene to whom God reveals what this chapter is talking about. But you have a power that comes and goes. It's come and gone 5 times in the past. It's on the scene. It's about to disappear. Then it's going to come back again. So you have a power that rises and falls. And it's a political power. And it has a relationship with a church. Well, where do we see an empire with a close relationship really ridden by that woman in chapter 3, led by a church that rises and falls, that comes back again and disappears? Well, we see it in Europe. It's talking about the Holy Roman Empire, this power that was continually resurrected within Europe, where you'd see one empire come and, or the Roman Empire fell, and you'd see one emperor come and put it back together and work with the Catholic Church to try and create a new empire that covers all of Europe, and then it would fall, and then someone else would come up again later and do the same thing. And there are more scriptures you can put together with Revelation 17 to confirm this. And we have a free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, that you can take and study and really prove this to yourself. You can get your own free copy of that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go up on the right-hand corner, click on the library tab, and you can go and you can get all of our books and booklets for free. You can get a print edition, you can read it online. And if this is new to you, I'd really try and encourage you to study that book and prove this to yourself so that you can see for yourself that the Bible, written thousands of years ago, is really talking about these current events. So one of the key events that this scripture, though, tells us to watch is the rise for this Holy Roman Empire one more time. When this Revelation 17 and verse 10 is that time that it's talking about where five are fallen and the sixth resurrection of this Holy Roman Empire is on the scene. Well, that was when Mr. Armstrong, Herbert W. Armstrong, was alive teaching about these prophecies. And that sixth power was Hitler's Germany. And then that fell, and once Mr. Armstrong died, then the seventh resurrection started to rise. Now, the different resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire, several of them have for a long time had connections with Latin America. And this is where we start to come back to this trade deal with Mercosur. Under the fourth resurrection of this Holy Roman Empire, the Habsburg Empire, this part of the world was conquered by the Holy Roman Empire. And it's had close links to the Holy Roman Empire and to these different resurrections of this empire ever since then. And it's had especially close religious links. This has been something that the Catholic Church pushed really hard. In 1493, just 1 year after Columbus's famous voyage, Pope Alexander VI published a bull dividing the new territories between Spain and Portugal on the condition that the natives were converted to Catholicism. And when you had people like Hernan Cortes invading the area, he was following a letter of instructions that said, the first aim of your expedition is to serve God and spread the Christian faith. And that by Christian faith really meant Catholic faith. And the first missionaries arrived pretty shortly after the fall of the Aztecs. And this missionary work, it was done by the Catholic orders, the Franciscans, the Dominicans, the Augustinians, and the Jesuits. There were reports at the time claiming that the Franciscans alone baptized 5 million people. Now, those kind of reports are impossible to verify, I think, from this point. But if that's true, that would be 1% of the world's population at the time. It's a pretty huge missionary mission. And the priests built new towns and villages for their converts. They constructed huge churches, in many cases larger than cathedrals in Europe. And the Jesuits took this probably to the highest level in South America, where hundreds of thousands lived in basically Jesuit-run autonomous colonies, complete even with their own Jesuit armies. And the secular authorities, they banned entry into the New World for what were called Hebrew-Christians, so Hebrew Christians. Christians that would kind of quote-unquote Judaize by keeping the Sabbath on Saturday. Nuevo Christians, new Christians, were banned. I think that probably refers to Protestants. Moriscos or Moors, meaning Catholics. And other heretics. They were all banned from Latin America. And they began to... But even despite this banning, they began to show up in Latin America alongside the Catholics. And so to deal with that, well, the Spanish Inquisition was also brought across the Atlantic into Latin America. And on the recommendation of this Inquisition, thousands of heretics throughout the continent were tortured until they died or until they confessed to charges of heresy and recanted. Over 1,000 people were executed by the Inquisition in Lima, Peru alone. We think about the Spanish Inquisition in Spain, but it was over all of this territory as well. And they worked to purge the continent of non-Catholics. And then the new Spanish and Portuguese governors really pushed the spread of Catholicism among native populations. And they did this not just because it gave them political support from the Vatican, even though that was important. It did give them support from the Vatican. But the Catholic Church was also key to their ability to control the continent with only a relatively small military. And religion was a major tool in building a close relationship with this area and for Europe building that relationship with this area. One letter to the Spanish king in 1768, it warned of the need for constant vigilance to preserve suitable conduct and healthy principles of obedience and love for your majesty among the clergy. So they're really emphasizing using the clergy to keep this area under control. Another letter in 1789, it said the conduct of the people depends in large part on that of the clergy. And this letter even said that the best way of stopping a riot or any unrest wasn't to call in the army, but was rather to station a friar with a holy crucifix in the nearest plaza. So they used the Catholic Church to to rule and dominate this region. Now, that started to break down in the 19th century when Spain kind of grew jealous of Catholic influence in the region, and they wanted to kind of take over that role and rule much more directly themselves. And so that's when you started to get some of these colonial powers being kicked out of the region. But still, it cemented strong links to that religion within Latin America. And that link has stayed, and that has helped preserve a link between Europe and Latin America, a strong cultural link to this day. And that's something that's even stronger now, as you have an Argentinian pope sitting in the Vatican in Europe. Now, European powers, their relationship with Latin America did change as well once you started to have the United States come on the scene and rise on as a power. And these European powers, they've long looked jealously at the United States. And Latin America provides a crucial stepping stone for Europe to reach the United States. The U.S. is hard for a European power to hit. Now, a continent-sized country, an ocean away. When I was on the show a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Normandy invasion. I guess that was almost a month ago now. That was hard enough across the English Channel, let alone trying to do some kind of Normandy invasion across the North Atlantic Ocean onto the United States. So pretty much as long as the U.S. has been a power, European nations have been trying to cement a hold in the region of Latin America so that they have a way to strike at the United States. You know, Napoleon launched a major military operation to get control of Haiti, and he aimed to use that as the linchpin of his ambitions to create a new French colonial empire in the Americas. Now, he didn't manage to get control of Haiti, and that was stopped. During the American Civil War, you had France using the opportunity of America's distraction to try and move on into Mexico and bring them under their control. In the early 1900s, Germany tried to establish a naval base in Venezuela. And at the same time, the German High Command were trying to put together plans for a land invasion of the United States. Thankfully, at the time, Theodore Roosevelt was the U.S. president, and he very firmly, very quickly, and very quietly stamped on that attempt. Then, during World War I, Germany infamously tried to persuade Mexico to go to war with the U.S. After World War II, you had many Latin American countries welcoming in ex-Nazi war criminals, helped over there by the Catholic Church, again with the Catholic Church using their strong links to that region. And then you had Soviet Russia establishing close links with Cuba and trying to build that up as a base and even a nuclear weapons base. And you had the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that's why America really needs to watch this region. And now Europe's moving in again. As I said, that history gives them a whole lot of strong links to that area. We just talked about those Catholic links. 40% of the world's Catholics are in Latin America. I think that figure's a few years old. It came from some research I did for a Trumpet article, I think, around 2012, 2013. But it can't have changed that much. Around 40%. And these Mercosur nations are all about just about a majority Catholic. I think in Argentina, it's around 80% very heavily Catholic. And there are other ties too. Already, 40% of foreign direct investment into Latin America comes from the European Union. There's a whole load of different trade stats that show the European Union being the most important trade partner for Latin America. China's rising up there as well. But still, Europe takes the lead in a whole lot of measures. Then between 2002 and 2011, again, this is going back to a few years when I did some research on this, but between that time period, over 49% weapons imported by South American nations came from the EU. That was according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute's arms transfer database. And that's compared to just over 20% from Russia and 15% from the United States. And more arms came within the EU. Most of Germany was sending more arms to Latin America than any other nation. South America's navies have mostly been purchased from Europe. Their armies are pretty much all use second-hand European tanks. The navies at second-hand European ships. And well, you see that just this whole trend where South America, they've clearly avoided being dependent on America for critical weapon systems, but they are dependent on Europe. And that doesn't happen by accident. All these national leaders all came to a similar conclusion. They couldn't afford to manufacture their own advanced weapons. at least not across all of these different areas. They didn't want to be dependent on the US or Russia, so they chose to side with Europe. And so South America is welded to Europe's military system. So you've got this a lot of religious and cultural links, you've got a lot of economic links, and they're just going to step up a huge amount with this Mercosur trade deal, and you have all of these military links as well. You're seeing Latin America and Europe really cement into an alliance. Now, Nicholas J. Spykman, he was one of America's great military thinkers. And this is proof that you don't need to understand about the Bible to be concerned about what is going on here. Just have a good understanding of history and geography. Though, of course, the Bible does give us a much, much more complete picture. But Nicholas Spykman, one of the big warnings that he gave to the United States as a geopolitical thinker was about the power and influence a united Europe would have in Latin America. He warned that Brazil and Argentina are so far away from the center of U.S. power, it's pretty difficult for the U.S. to project any power into that region. For all practical purposes, it's just as easy to travel from Buenos Aires to Spain or Portugal as it is to travel from there to Washington, D.C. And in fact, you could sum up a good chunk of his geopolitical thinking by saying that one of America's top priorities should be to stop the development of a united Europe, because if Europe is united, it has such close links to Latin America, it will be very hard for the U.S. to keep them out. And then once a united European power is in Latin America, it can threaten the United States. And that's why Spykman was an early supporter for war with Hitler, for taking America into war against the Nazis. He warned against isolationism, arguing that even if the U.S. could have avoided war with Germany over Europe, it could not have avoided a struggle with Germany for hegemony over South America. So he basically argued if Europe won, well, if it won and conquered Europe, that would automatically give it a huge amount of power within Latin America, from which it could threaten the United States directly, and Europe would be, and America would be forced into a war with Hitler under much more unfavorable circumstances. Robert Kaplan, he's another, a more modern top geopolitical thinker. He discusses Spykman's ideas in his book, Revenge of Geography. And he warns that already one can see that the more united Europe becomes, the greater its tensions with the United States. A true European superstate with armed forces and a single foreign policy at its command would be both a staunch competitor of the U.S. and possibly the dominant outside power in the equidistant zones of southern South America. So if Europe comes together as a superstate, they're going to end up being a competitor to the United States, and they're probably going to be the dominant power in South America. And so with that Mercosur deal, we see Europe taking a very important step before that, or towards that. So this Mercosur deal, it's a major step in the rise of the Holy Roman Empire, and a major step in bringing that Holy Roman Empire closer to the United States, in a position to threaten the United States. Europe is bringing this very Catholic area now into their fold. Now, this Mercosur agreement, it's not finalized. It's not a final done deal yet. It's a draft agreement. And there is something important here to take note of. There are quite a few in the EU that disagree or that aren't so keen on this deal. And now it's got to be approved by every single national parliament of all 27 EU member states. And that can often be, that whole process has often proved to be an absolute pain. Getting 27 parliaments to agree to anything is often a pretty big challenge. And so to get them all to sign up to this could be difficult. So there are some, like I said, that are all for it. Germany, for example, it makes great economic sense for them. Spain and Portugal are all for it because of their historic ties for the area, to that area. They want to bring it closer to the EU. But there's some strong opposition, especially from farmers. The EU does a lot to try and protect farmers. I think some cynics have basically said that France is in the EU pretty much just to protect its inefficient farms from foreign competition. So there are all across Europe, there's from the farming community a lot of opposition to this because they don't want to have to compete with cheaper food coming in from Latin America. So this new deal, it's got to go through European Parliament and each parliament within Europe. And some are talking about it could take up to 3 years to implement. I think it will be much quicker than that. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be easy to get it or to get it agreed by everybody. And Mr. Flory had something to say about that that I think is really interesting in the Key of David program. We'll play that clip in just a minute. But also, as well as farmers, there's all these environmental groups. There's a lot of, and these green parties that have been rising recently in Europe, and a lot of them are opposed to it, despite all the tough environmental rules in the agreement. And, for example, the Paris Climate Change Agreement being kind of a key condition of this agreement. The environmental groups are saying, well, it's going to lead to more deforestation of the Amazon. And so they're dead against it. So it already looks like it's going to be a tough... It looks like it could be a tough process to get through. But what's interesting about that is... Well, here, let's just play. This is what Mr. Flory said about getting this, getting Europe to agree to this agreement. This is clip five.
But if this deal is finalized in 2019, well, that probably also means that it may very well be that there's those 27 nations in Europe called the European Union are going to be reduced to 10 nations or 10 kings, probably in 2019 as well. Now, I don't see how this European Union, the way it's divided today, and that includes religion as well, how can it be closely tied to Latin America, which is certainly, you'd have to say, very united in their religion, and the Holy Roman Empire is going to have to become very united in their religion, and that's why, really, it's reduced to 10 nations. That's the only way they can remove the division.
So that's a really interesting statement there, that if we see this deal finalized in 2019, which I think you could call what the signing of the draft or the announcement of the draft agreement on Friday finalized, if we see that, then Mr. Flory said there, well, I think we're going to see the European Union reduced to 10 kings as well. And so maybe that is a strong sign that the 27 are just not going to agree to it. And that you could see the European Union being shrunk down to these 10 nations as a part of this agreement process goes through. And you can see those tensions developing already. Those nations with a stronger Catholic heritage, they are fine with the deal. They're willing to approve it, even if it may cause their farmers some problem, because they have the same overall strategic vision for the European Union and they share the Catholic heritage of this area. Emmanuel Macron in France, for example, he's given the deal cautious approval so far. But then those nations without those strong Catholic roots, well, they'll probably oppose the deal because they put more value on, say, the economic sense and the competition with trying to protect their farmers and that kind of thing. So watch as this approval process plays out. You know, people are saying that it could be tough to get this through. And I think there's a very good reason that they're saying that. So this could be just the approval process for this deal could be really significant for the European Union as well. Well, I think we'll take one more break now. When we get back, there's another final critical aspect, probably the most important aspect as far as it concerns the United States, the most important aspect of this deal and of this relationship that's building that we need to talk about.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. World War III is closer than you think. Terrorism and economic crisis is tearing Europe apart. The only nation that can lead Europe out of the mess is Germany. But Germany can't do it without a strong leader. Bible prophecy says they will get one. He will unite Europe in a new Holy Roman Empire. But it won't stop there. Every time Europe unites, war breaks out. Find out how it will happen again one last time. Request a free copy of The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. What will the Holy Roman Empire do
after it has stopped terrorism and saved Europe's economy? This book will tell you. You'll be shocked at how much it will affect your future. Act today.
To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
So we need to watch Europe, and we need to watch what's happening in Latin America, because it has everything to do with the life of Americans. Certainly, the prosperity of Americans, and a lot more.
It's another clip from that Key of David program, and that's exactly what we're doing in today's show. Watching what's happening in Europe and in Latin America. And we've talked about the prophetic rise of the Holy Roman Empire, its strong links to Latin America. But there's another crucial prophetic component to what is happening here. God promised Britain and America unparalleled wealth and prosperity in the Bible. You can read about that in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. And you can turn to passage after passage all throughout those first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Deuteronomy, Exodus. They all have these scriptures talking about these blessings that are going to come upon Israel. You can read those blessings. You can see that ancient Israel, they were blessed, but they never received blessings on the scale that was talked about in some of those verses. And the reason for that is that those blessings were given to the modern descendants of Israel today, Britain and America. And you can read much more about that, like I said, in that book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and really prove that to yourself. And that book does provide irrefutable proof of that. But Deuteronomy chapter 28 lists some of these blessings and that would be given to these nations, and curses that would be given if they disobeyed. And Deuteronomy 28 and verse 52 says, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates, until your high-fenced walls come down wherein you trusted throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land which the Lord your God has given you." So you can see elsewhere that some of the blessings God promised to Britain and America were these gates. Gates to prosperity, gates to world trade. These two nations would control all of the important choke points around the world necessary to allow free trade to go on, necessary to be a prosperous nation. And now all around the world, they've been taken away. You know, we see that even with what's going on in Hong Kong, with the old imperial or the old colonial flag being raised as a protest. But China's been trying to clamp down. And like I said, we'll see exactly what happens there. But that's an important seagate that has gone right in this whole area of Latin America that we've been talking about. Panama, the Panama Canal. An important seagate the U.S. used to own and then gave it back. Gave it away. And so here in the book of in Deuteronomy, God says, well, another power is going to have control of these gates. And they're going to use these gates to besiege the United States and Britain. Use these gates as an economic weapon to cut them off from world commerce, from the global economy. And here's what Mr. Flurry had to say about this prophecy in that Key of David program.
But anyhow, our spiritual father is angry because we're trusting in men. But again, you have to remember, we can't be besieged economically and in a trade war unless Latin America is a part of that besieging. Then we're surrounded, and it's going to work out badly, and God is actually putting it in their minds to do that because he's very unhappy with us.
So if there's going to be a trade war, if there's going to be someone besieging America, you can't do that without Latin America. Now, the majority of all U.S. waterborne foreign trade travels to or from U.S. ports on the Gulf of Mexico. So there's no other region on earth that's as important for America's trade or as critical to, say, besieging America as this region. Just huge amounts of American trade coming through there. Those Gulf of Mexico ports are just critical to America's economy. And so if you're going to shut that down like you would have to do in a siege, well, you're going to have control of this region. And so you see Europe moving into Latin America. And we'll see, I'm sure, Europe and Latin America becoming more hostile to the U.S. Europe turning this region against the U.S. And the Bible gives us a very clear and strong warning about where this siege is leading. Ezekiel chapter 5 and 6 is a passage that deals directly with this. You know, adds more detail, basically, to that siege prophesied in Deuteronomy chapter 28. And in verse 11, God says that he himself is against our nation. And that he is behind this. He's allowing this. He is against us. And in the start of that chapter, he has this picture demonstrated of this coming siege. And he talks about how Britain and America will be cut off from the world, cut off from world trade, to absolutely devastating effect. And he goes through all of the massive amounts of casualties that being cut off from this would have as social order breaks down within Britain and America's cities. But at the same time, this same passage contains crucial hope for all of this as well. Now, God lays out all of these events in the Bible. He has his church proclaiming these events as a warning, getting this message out to the world so that people, so that nations, or even just individuals can repent, can turn to this, and can avoid this. And even if they don't repent, even if they don't turn to him, well, just the fact that all of this is laid out so clearly in advance, that it's all described in the Bible, and that it happens exactly as forecast, that in itself carries a powerful message. That shows that God is in command of these events, that it's all happening as part of his plan. And that even though there is a whole lot of pain in the short term and a whole lot of destruction involved in these prophecies, it's all happening as part of a purpose so fantastic it dwarfs all of that. Ezekiel chapter 6 and verse 9, you're still in the context of this kind of siege and these prophecies. Well, it says that after these things happen, well, then you shall remember me among the nations. It leads to Britain, America, Judah in the Middle East, Israel there, remembering God, turning back to God. Verse 10 says that, "And they shall know that I am the Eternal, and I have not said in vain that I would do this evil unto them." So you know, these prophecies go out there. People hear that God says, "I'm going to do this." And then it happens, and then they're going to know. They shall know that I am the Eternal. It's going to lead to our nations getting to know God. It is all part of his plan. And that's the only way that's going to lead to our nations knowing God. And that's the only way that the massive problems that we see building around us are going to be solved. You know, these problems that are becoming more and more obvious that we see in all of the different headlines every day. You know, Safari mentioned just in the Trumpet brief yesterday, had a write-up of that abortion program that he did a few weeks ago with some of just this massive, massive tragedy and the murder of babies. Well, how are you going to solve that? This is it. Then shall they know that I am the Eternal. The homeless problems, the crime, the broken families, the perversion that's being put out by media, big companies, governments encouraging perverse lifestyles. How do you solve that? Then shall they know that I am the Eternal. That's the solution. And so that's what ultimately these events are leading to. It's leading to our nations knowing God. It's leading to a wonderful world tomorrow when all of our nations are subject to him. Well, I guess we took up just about most of the show going into that story. If you still want to read more about this and to learn more about this story, you can read our cover article from the Trumpet print edition. America is being besieged economically by Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flory. That covers this whole story, and I took quite a bit from that for this program, but that will really help you go through and prove this story, see what this is all about. As usual, you can read that on our website, thetrumpet.com. We have all of our material up there, all of the free books and booklets that I mentioned on this show. You can order on there. While you've been listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio show here at 101.3 on the FM dial or at td@kpcg.fm or on YouTube, live broadcasting on the internet there as well. If you have any questions or comments, you can shoot us an email at td@kpcg.fm. That's the one. It's been too long. I shouldn't say that. I'll get a whole bunch of, I'll end up subbing a whole bunch now, but, td@kpcg.fm is the web address or the email address. Thanks for listening, and please do tune in when we'll be back at the same time tomorrow.